Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, November 18th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the weekend's box office numbers and a little bit of movie news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, before we start today, I wanted to give a shout out to a listener named Alex who wrote in with a question a couple months ago, and they said, I'm paraphrasing the question, but basically it was, hey, I watched Longlegs the other day and I noticed that there are something like five or six different production company logos that showed up in front of the movie. Can you tell me what each of those companies actually did? And I was like, you know what? I've been doing this for like 15 years in this career, more than that. And I don't think I actually can answer that question adequately. I have guesses about what they do. I have assumptions about what each of those companies did, but I couldn't like definitively say this company did that and this other company did this other thing. So I spent a little while, a few weeks, tracking down a bunch of the producers of Longlegs to explain that process to me and answer that question. So I published that article this morning. I think it turned out really well. So shout out to Alex for asking the question. And this just goes to show that if you have a good question and you send it in to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com, I might actually answer it and turn it into an article at Slash Film. So I encourage people to check out that article because I think it answers some interesting questions and kind of goes behind the scenes of how especially indie film productions work these days.
Huge compliments to you for digging into this because it is one of those things that people don't really think about. And it's even a thing that Family Guy made a joke about years ago, but it's like, but yep. It is like, why? It's a good question to ask, and it's really cool that you actually had the time to dig into it. So I for one, thought it was awesome, and I just want to shout it out as well. I thought it was really cool.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Okay, so let's talk about a couple pieces of movie news before we get into the box office stuff. I wanted to mention Predator Badlands, which is Dan Trachtenberg's new Predator movie, one of two that are coming out next year. There was a piece, I think, a bit of news, I guess this came out late last week, that this new movie is going to take the sci-fi franchise in a wild direction that we haven't seen before. And Ryan, you wrote this article for us, so I wonder if you can tell me what the new direction is that that we're going to be experiencing in Predator Badlands.
Oh boy, would I love to. This was, I made the joke, sort of like with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes last year, when this news broke last week, I was like, after I turned in the article, I was like, I'm now going to go into cryo sleep until this movie comes out. But basically, Dan Trachtenberg finally revealed some concrete details about Predator Badlands. And what he revealed is that, unlike any of the previous movies, the Predator itself will essentially be the main character. Even though Elle Fanning is in this as like a female lead playing multiple characters, Trachtenberg confirmed, it will indeed be a movie that follows the Predator. He said, the creature is front and center, leading the charge. He's still badass, but there's something that touches you emotionally too. Creating a character you connect with, but are also super intimidated by, has been challenging, but exciting. So, yeah, this is kind of a big deal. It's also like a bold way thing. Like that's kind of a crazy way to go about it because predators obviously do not communicate in English, you know? So like if we're not following humans, it's going to be interesting. Like how does this thing communicate? How does this work for the audience? Is it like largely a silent movie? Like, I don't know. So there's a lot of questions, but the other thing to know is that this is not like Prey where it takes place in the past. This actually takes place in the future. So it's just kind of another standalone sort of entry in the series. But everything he said got me super hyped. He was also very complimentary of Elle Fanning's performance. And yeah, I just simply cannot wait for this thing.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, Elle Fanning playing multiple roles in this, which is interesting because it's the first time that we'd heard confirmation anyway that that was the case for this movie. And if she's not the protagonist of the film, is she going to be set up as some sort of antagonist against the Predator in this movie? Like that, flipping the script to that degree would be really fascinating, where like a human is the villain in a movie like this. And I know that like the Alien franchise, for example, has kind of hinted at things like that before. You know, you've got Paul Reiser's character in Aliens as being this sort of like smarmy corporate, clearly a villainous type of character, and like the greater villain of the movie is capitalism in some ways. But like, is there an opportunity here to do something like that in the Predator universe, the Predator lore, or is it going to be more explicit than that? I don't know. Just like you said, a lot of questions, but I'm very excited about this sort of reframing, this shift in perspective for Predator Badlands. So that comes out basically a year from now. So stay tuned for that. And then the only other piece of news that I wanted to touch on with you, Ryan, is that the Tomb Raider TV series, which is going to be coming to Amazon Prime Video, has found its Lara Croft, and that is Sophie Turner, who is the actress who played Sansa Stark in Game of Thrones. She's going to be playing Lara Croft. She beat out Lucy Boynton from Bohemian Rhapsody and Sing Street to win that role. I think Emma Corrin and Mackenzie Davis were also in the running, or sort of in the conversation at some point. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who created Fleabag, is the one who's going to be running this show, like writing it and show running and being the creative force behind it. So I wanted to know what you think about Sophie Turner in this context, because I don't even think you're a big Game of Thrones person. I think you've said on this podcast before that like the way that that show ended gave you vindication in never actually watching the show, you know, spending time investing in it.
I did the first season of Game of Thrones. So I have a little bit of context there. And I've seen the X-Men movies, which are her other big credit. I will say, all due respect, she has not wowed me as an actress. I don't look at her and think Lara Croft, but I also try not to be judgy in these situations, right? I think back very famously to like Heath Ledger being cast as the Joker, everybody going, oh, what the hell? And then that was amazing. Daniel Craig gets cast as James Bond, everybody goes, oh my God, what the hell? And then Casino Royale is the best James Bond movie ever. So, you know, like, I try not to. I was more interested in Lucy Boynton for the role. I like her a lot. I think she's a very underrated actress. But again, what do I know? Like, I try to not. Again, that she must have done something. Like, you know, like it wasn't clearly that they went to her with an offer. It was that she won the role in this process. So she did something to the producers, to Amazon, to everybody that said, you are the one for this role. Fair enough. I've also never been a gigantic Tomb Raider guy. Like, I played a couple of games, whatever. So, you know, it's an interesting choice. I know a lot of people were fans of Hayley Atwell's performance in the animated Netflix series. And so, you know, we've had a recent example of the property that people were fans of and a pretty different actress in that role. So I'm curious to see how this all unfolds. But, I mean, with Phoebe Waller-Bridge in there, like, kind of behind the scenes driving things, it's a hard project to ignore because her credibility is so good at this point.
Yeah, she's the biggest draw for me, even above Sophie Turner, who I like quite a bit. And I think she actually showed a really impressive range over the course of the entirety of Game of Thrones. Like, I would not say that season one or two or even three, Sophie Turner would be a natural fit for Lara Croft. But by the end of that show and where that character arc ended up, I think it makes a lot more sense. So, I'm curious to see how this goes. And this is definitely something I'm going to be tuning into in some capacity. I don't know if I'll finish it or whatever, but there's enough here to get me to click play, which is, I'm sure, what Amazon wants in this situation. So, all right, with all of that news out of the way, let's get into some box office stuff. So, Ryan, why don't you run through the top 10 at the box office, and then we'll take a break and get into some analysis of that.
Yeah, you got it. Look, as we discussed, I've tried to set this up. This was going to be a somewhat quiet weekend, but there is a lot to discuss. So, coming in at number one was Red One, Amazon's very expensive holiday movie starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Topped the charts with $34 million and a little over 4,000 screens. It had already started playing internationally, so we'll get into some of those numbers here in a minute. But a mixed bag there, to be certain. At number two, Venom The Last Dance, with $7.3 million, dropping about 54% in its fourth weekend. We will talk a little bit more about that one in a second, because it has passed some surprising milestones that I wasn't quite expecting. At number three, the best Christmas pageant ever, holding into the number three spot in its second weekend, dropping about 50% with $5.4 million. That one has made almost $20 million domestically already. That is becoming a quiet little hit for Lionsgate. At number four, Heretic, A24's new horror movie with Hugh Grant, held pretty strong as well, with $5.1 million, dropped about 52%. That one is a little north of $20 million domestically, and it should be noted that, you know, for a horror movie with a C-plus cinema score, a 52% drop is pretty good. And with no other big horror movies opening until December 6th, that one's got a lot of runway. At number five, we have The Wild Robot, with its eighth weekend still holding strong in the top five, $4.3 million. That one passed the $300 million mark worldwide this weekend. It is at about $308 million. Pretty awesome stuff there. Number six, we have Smile 2, another $2.9 million in its fourth weekend. That one is quietly chugging along, doing well. Again, benefited from a lack of other new horror movies. About $132 million worldwide. I would be surprised if we have to wait much longer to find out that Smile 3 is happening. At number seven, a movie I finally saw this weekend and absolutely loved, Conclave, with $2.8 million. That one's still holding pretty strong for Focus Features as well. Coming up on $27 million domestic for that one. A quiet little hit for Focus there. Number eight, something called Hello Love Again. I must admit, I do not really know what this is, but it made $2.3 million on just 248 screens for a whopping per theater average north of $9,000, the best in the top 20 this weekend. Number nine was A Real Pain, which is Jesse Eisenberg's new movie. That one expanded wide from Searchlight. It did okay with $2.3 million. But, you know, it's kind of a so-so for an expansion of that size, so we'll have to see how that does in the coming weeks. I think that's sort of a potential award season hopeful. And at number 10, we have Anora, speaking of award season hopefuls, with $1.8 million in its fifth weekend. That dropped 27%, added another almost 400 screens this weekend. It is at $10.5 million domestic.
Excellent. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll be right back.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, where do you want to start, Ryan, with the analysis of these movies here?
Well, let's start at the top. Let's go with Red One. And I, not to pull back the curtain too much, but I had brought a potential story to you and some of the other editors today. And you guys, I felt the eyeballs on me when I pitched it to you. because I think that this has largely been framed as a flop. I've not necessarily been afraid to run a bit counter to some of my other fellow box office analysts. And here's the thing. All right, let's go over some more numbers here. So $34 million domestic. It's done $50 million overseas so far for an $84 million running total. All right. So, you know, it's not great for a movie with a reported $250 million budget and another $100 million or so marketing. But let's talk about what that number really is. That's $250 million, a streaming $250 million. That is, this movie, everyone got paid outright. Dwayne Johnson got paid like he was never going to make another dime because this movie was not originally going to go to theaters. So, you know, there's no box office bonuses or anything so far as I know. This was all money, you know, like, that was it. And same thing with J.K. Simmons, everybody else. They got paid up front. So did Chris Evans. So did Lucy Liu. So that's a lot of money in salaries. Would this have still been an expensive movie not going to streaming? Sure. Probably, I don't know, maybe 150? Call it more like Rampage? You know, something like that. So that's important to understand. Secondly, this is a holiday movie. It is going to have longer legs. Critics were not super kind to it, but it has an A- cinema score and a 90% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Your general moviegoers like this movie. They, despite it all, Amazon made this for the right audience. So they were actually probably smart to put this in theaters. Another thing that I would say is without this movie this weekend, your next best movie made less than $8 million. what would this weekend look like without this movie? It would have been pretty bad out there for theaters. So Amazon, once again, kind of in, you know, much like Apple at times, kind of being the quiet hero here, releasing these movies in theaters at the right time. So there's that. Now, the other thing, let's look, you know, if you want to look at like some other recent movies that Dwayne Johnson has been in that, you know, opened, you know, what did they do, right? Okay, look at an original movie like Skyscraper. What did that do? That only opened to $24.9 million. It made $68 million total domestically. Red One is going to do more than that. You want to look at something like Rampage, another movie I mentioned that could be a better comp for this, given that we're talking about a streaming $250 budget. Okay, well, that did $427 worldwide. It opened to $35.7 million domestically. Very comparable domestic opening. This is the type of movie, you know, so I guess what I'm trying to paint a picture of here is this going to make money in theaters? Absolutely not. Is a $250 million budget for this kind of movie still buffoonery? Of course. But it's Amazon streaming buffoonery. It's not the same thing as like if Marvel said the Fantastic Four First Steps is $250 million, that would be a bit more of a problem because mm-hmm. there's probably still box office bonuses there. None of the movies they've made recently have justified that sort of budget. You know what I mean? It would be a different conversation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Amazon isn't expecting this to profit in theaters. At this rate, it's probably going to at least get to $200 million worldwide. Theaters keep half that money. Okay, so Amazon gets $100 million. That covers their huge marketing spend. And then whatever this was going to do on Prime Video or VOD, well, suddenly this movie's profile is boosted a lot by that good word of mouth from general moviegoers. So it's a bigger hit on Prime Video. It's a potential bigger hit on VOD. It might have more legs for years to come as an annual holiday movie for people because of this theatrical release. So I would just caution people framing this as an outright flop. These gigantic streaming movies that get budgeted, these crazy budgets, and then go to theaters, there's no way to judge these like a regular blockbuster. We've talked about this a lot with movies like Napoleon or Killers of the Flower Moon. It's just judged in a different way. The other thing I should point out before I let you talk a little bit, Ben, I'm sorry, is that this is now technically the biggest opening for a streaming to theatrical movie, meaning that a movie that was originally intended for streaming that does go to theaters. Previously, Killers of the Flower Moon held that title. So by a lot of measures, this is sort of a qualified success.
Does that include Glass Onion?
Well, yeah, Glass Onion didn't get a wide theatrical release. It was in theaters for like a week. So also because Netflix never reported official numbers for that, those were only estimates from rival studios and things like that. So that's a weird case where, you know, Netflix never even really reported those numbers.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But so as in, I think that stat is more getting at a intended streaming release that was given a wide theatrical release instead, like a proper theatrical release, not just some token like. But anyway, so look, that's enough of my rambling. I'm not going to bat for this movie. I'm not saying it's a huge hit. I'm not saying it's not irresponsible on some level. But I am saying, like, framing it as some catastrophic flop like every other $250 million movie that doesn't make $100 million opening weekend, it's not really fair. So I would leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, my big takeaway from this, Ryan, is that, like, once again, I'm disappointed in The Rock because of the choices that he's making. And, like, I think this movie just looks like utter trash. To be clear, I've not seen it yet. So, like, there's a chance maybe I'm judging it too harshly from the trailers or whatever. I just think it looks awful. And the fact that this movie has performed as well as it has basically seems to underline the idea that, like, The Rock is still doing something right. And, like, a lot of audiences are not on my page and just are willing to see him do whatever this is. And so that potentially could shape the rest of his career in terms of him just continuing to make stuff like this that I feel like is kind of a waste of his talents. But I know he's got that A24 movie coming up where he's like getting back to basics and all of that. And I'm very excited about that because I hope that that performs well enough or at least like gives him whatever signals he's looking for that like that is more of the direction that I think would just be a more interesting way to go about pursuing a career after 20 plus years in Hollywood. But yeah.
Did you read or watch any of that interview he did with GQ, the cover story they did on him?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so yeah, so he talked about a lot of that and like, you know, because he talked about a few years ago you know, I'm not here for credit. You know, I'm trying to make movies for masses, blah, blah, blah. But he's completely changed his tune on that. You know, he's talking about, you know, I'm not just taking every big thing that comes my way now. I want to spend more time with my family. So the projects that I'm taking, I am taking with consideration. That's why he's doing the Smashing Machine. And that's why he's, you know, so he's sort of looking for, it sounds like he is changing his tune a bit. Like, this movie has been in development for like 4 or 5 years. He was committed to this for a long time. So I don't necessarily think that this is going to be the type of thing he continues to seek out. But it is kind of a feather in his cap when he wants to go make another Smashing Machine to say, I can open an original movie bigger than most people can open an original movie, because for whatever it's worth, even though it's a holiday movie, this isn't based on anything. It's an original movie. Yep. And he opened it to $34 million. You want to know how many original movies opened this year to $34 million or more? It is not a lot.
Mm.
You know, what can I say?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Okay. Well, yeah, I'll have to check out that GQ interview. Maybe that'll make me feel a little bit better about the direction that he seems to be heading. Okay. So you mentioned Venom, The Last Dance, and you wanted to touch more on that. So tell me about that.
I do. We've been a little bit quiet on this one the past couple of weeks because it's just sort of been quietly, you know, topping charts or whatever. But so let's look. It's now made $127.6 million domestically and $308.5 million internationally. That's the big number. $436.1 million worldwide. Now, what is fascinating is that because this movie has performed so big overseas, Venom the Last Dance has quietly already passed the international total posted by Venom Let There Be Carnage in 2021. That movie finished with $501.5 million. And this is largely due to Venom Last Dance has made something like a little over $90 million in China, which is rare for a Hollywood movie these days. It is doing gangbusters business overseas. So you know, like, again, I just want to point out this movie has surpassed Let There Be Carnage internationally. That's the big thing, and you know, that's happened very quietly. Like you and I talked about a couple weeks ago, there's no buzz on this film, nobody in the US is talking about it. It kind of came and went, and yet it's doing numbers. Like, it's doing, you know, it might still get to 500 million. It's another one of those things where, like, I have not liked these Venom movies at all. Clearly there's an audience for them, and you know, Sony is committed to theatrical more than ever, and this is one of the most successful superhero movies of the year outside of Deadpool and Wolverine. So, you know, again, another one of those, I must throw my hands up and go, does this look interesting to me? No. Is it clearly resonating with audiences? Yes.
So we've talked about how this could maybe complicate things for Sony moving forward in terms of, like, what kind of superhero projects they greenlight based on the Marvel properties that they have licensed or have under their umbrella or whatever. I wonder if you think that there's any lessons that other studios could learn, or if they're paying attention to this at all and might factor some of this film's overseas performance into their decision making. Because my understanding, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast as well over the past year or so, maybe a little longer than that even, that, like, the China numbers in particular have dried up significantly, and, like, it seems like the business has changed in terms of overseas releases and what studios can rely on. So do you think there are any other studios out there sort of seeing what's going on with Venom the Last Dance and, like, foaming at the mouth or whatever about what they could do for themselves?
The China thing complicated because I basically, like, and I've said this before, is that, like, Hollywood can't depend on it anymore, so anything you make in China has to be viewed as icing on the cake, right? And that's very much the case here. The biggest thing that I would say to take away here is Tom Hardy is clearly a star with international appeal in the right project. There's that. Secondly, and I brought this up a bunch with this movie, it is a $120 million budget. Or somewhere between 110 and 120. Lower 100s. We just talked about Red One, which is like 250. Even if it wasn't a streaming movie, it would probably still be 150, 160, whatever. You know, you get to profits much, much quicker at $120 million, even though it's a still huge budget movie, than you do with $200 million, right?
Yep.
You know, so that's the thing here. This can be an unmitigated theatrical success at $400 million worldwide because of that budget. The Marvels, even if that had made $400 million worldwide, it would still be a mess. Eternals made a little over $400 million worldwide, and that franchise is dead in the water for Marvel. Why? Because it cost $200 million. So the biggest thing, especially if you're trying to launch a new superhero franchise in an era where we have not had a new one break out in a while, make these things for lower budgets if you can to start out. Like, for example, if Black Adam had been a $130 million movie, given what it made, they might have taken a chance on Black Adam 2. You know, not that anyone necessarily really wanted that, but like, but it, you know, like it, but I'm just making a point that at that point it would have been profitable, you know? So that's my biggest thing. And do these Venom movies suck because they're lacking spectacle or CGI? No, I don't think so. You know, so, you know, I don't necessarily know where all that money's always going, but that would be my big thing.
Okay. All right. So any other moments or aspects from the top 10 here that you want to drill down on before we wrap it up?
Yeah, for sure. One thing very quietly, we won't talk about it a lot more, but Beetlejuice quietly passed the $450 million worldwide mark. That is like, I think that's a best case scenario for this movie. It's really great. I do believe Warner Brothers is probably going to try to put the heat on Burton to do Beetlejuice 3. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. Here, the Sony movie from Robert Zemeckis has already fallen out of the top 10 in its third weekend. That one just is not going to work. It hasn't even passed 12 million domestic. Anora is one we need to keep watching. That one has made just about $20 million worldwide. Basically, it's doing what it sort of needs to do, which is just hang in there week to week until the Oscar nominations come out, and then it can sort of slow roll its way to maybe becoming a solid hit. But right now, it's sort of in that area where it's doing just fine enough, but it needs to kind of pick up some steam to be able to really stick around long enough to hang out in the awards race to benefit from the theatrical release once that happens. So I think that's about it, though. I think everything else is kind of we've already talked about on some level. So.
Cool. All right. Well, that sounds good. You can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will link to several things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features that you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.